This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Gambling with offshore casino websites is illegal in this country, which doesn't stop people from doing it. Many Americans use sometimes creative means to find a way to put a bet on a football game or play in an online poker tournament. In 2006, an online gambling consultancy valued the American gambling market at almost $15 billion. That's just online. Today, we'll take you inside the virtual casino. A little bit later in the program, a dispute over offshore online gambling leads to a David versus Goliath case at the World Trade Organization. So far, David is way ahead on points. And we'll talk with the man asked to divide donations amongst the victims of the shootings at Virginia Tech. But first, the virtual casino. How different is betting online from a Las Vegas or an Atlantic City casino? If you gamble online or if you have questions about how the virtual casino works, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email talk at npr.org. You can also join the conversation online on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Here to tell us more about online gambling is Will Detweiler, an online poker player. He's with us here in Studio 3A. Nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you.
And if you're playing poker over the internet, how do you know if somebody's bluffing?
Well, unlike a live casino where you could look in someone's eyes and maybe get a read or tell on them, online poker, you can't do that. You have to kind of make sense of the hand. If someone is being very aggressive and it looks likely they have a hand, then you would think they have a hand. But it could be possible that they're telling a story throughout the hand and some action they do is inconsistent, like some bet is strange, and that can kind of give away the fact that maybe they aren't being consistent in their betting and they're full of it, they have the bluff.
Mm-hmm. Now, you are a child, in terms of a poker player, of ESPN, the World Series of Poker, and the internet.
Yes.
You started watching it on TV and got interested.
Yeah, I went to GW and freshman year, we were just watching poker on TV, and I said to my friend, this is stupid, why would anyone watch poker on TV? And I started watching, and it was very interesting. Started playing in the dorm rooms, and then a few months later, I was playing online.
And would you now consider yourself a professional poker player?
No, I wouldn't consider myself a professional poker player. I don't make much as my friends who are professional poker players, and I would like to get a job in the marketplace working with people.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder, you've obviously played in both venues now. Is it easier to win or play online or in a real cash game sitting around a table?
Generally, in live games, the players aren't as good, and it's easier to win there. But online, you can play up to 6-10 tables at one time.
Mm-hmm.
So you can effectively increase your win rate by 6-10 times just by playing more tables. And it's just faster and quicker as well.
And are there tactics, are there tricks you can use to play online? For example, is there a good time of day to play?
Absolutely. The worst time of day to play is the morning and the middle of the day. That's when all the regulars are playing, and that's when the games are the toughest. The best time to play is around 8 p.m., 9 p.m., especially on weekends, when people who are partying come home and do some recreational gambling.
And you hope that they've been partying heartily and their judgment may be impaired somewhat.
More or less.
Is there etiquette in an online poker game? And we do watch these things on TV, and there's lots of trash talking amongst the players and that sort of thing. Is that kind of thing happen online?
Yeah, it's even worse online. It's the internet, and it's very anonymous, and people are just rude and say terrible things to each other and constantly berate other players, just like internet chat rooms, except now people are competing for money, so it's even worse.
So you better develop a thick hide if you're going to do this too.
Absolutely.
Now, who plays online? Is it mostly younger people like you?
Yeah, I would say the online crowd is probably 18 to 25-year-olds. A lot of people in college who just found out this thing and they're good at it and now they're doing it for spending money or for serious money. A lot of these kids just have a lot of money and don't really have the value of the dollar that other people do. They go around doing ridiculous things and blowing money left and right. It's kind of a ridiculous scene to be in. I've had a lot of fun, but I think I'm going to move on to something more serious now.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've been talking a bit about how gambling websites are run. We're going to be doing that in a minute. But I wonder, which site, how do you choose which site to play on?
Well, the different sites offer a variety of different schemes to entice you to play on their site. They'll offer you money to sign up, various things like this. But essentially what it comes down for me is security for my money. I want to know that the site I'm playing on isn't going to cut and run with my money and that if I need to get money offline, that isn't a big hassle. So what I look for is security in the online poker site.
And how do you measure that?
Reputation, largely. Different sites have backstories and problems. People who lose money and the site doesn't get it back, or there's a scam and someone loses a whole lot of money. And some sites have bad reputations, and some sites have good reputations, and a good reputation is worth a lot of money in the online gambling industry.
William Detweiler, good luck.
Thank you.
William Detweiler, an online poker player going on to better things if his parents are listening, and he joined us today here in Studio 3A. We really appreciate it. Joining us now to tell us more about the virtual casino and how it all works is Sue Schneider. She's the publisher of Interactive Gaming News. She's with us today from the studios of our member station in St. Louis, KWMU. Nice to speak with you today.
Nice to speak with you also.
So based on what we just heard from William Detweiler, just broaden that, if you will. How is a virtual casino different from taking a trip to Las Vegas to play at Harrods or Caesar's Palace?
Well, they are very similar. A lot of the experience is the same, other than the fact that you're in your home and or your office or on your mobile phone doing that sort of thing. So there are those that say it's a non-smoking environment, and there are those that are in rural areas that don't have access. So it is a situation where it's different in many ways, but in the basic experience of the game and what you're trying to accomplish is very similar.
And are the odds different in virtual casinos?
It really varies, as it does in the terrestrial world. There are percentage payouts that are required in some states and countries on the terrestrial world, and there are some licensing jurisdictions for online casinos that do the same thing. Most legitimate licensing jurisdictions really require testing of the software to make sure that it's fair and that they've determined what those payout percentages are. And in many cases, they require auditing of that after the fact to make sure that it is in keeping with what they've established.
And when you're talking about the governments involved, you're talking about the governments that host these casinos, which are often in Central America and the Caribbean.
They started out that way. Really, most of the most popular licensing jurisdictions from the business operator's standpoint are now really in the European area. There are some of the Channel Islands, Gibraltar, Malta, a variety of jurisdictions like that that have really become the most popular. Still, most of the larger sports books operate out of the UK itself. And when you're talking about, other jurisdictions like most of the Australian states allow sports betting and that sort of thing. So there are a fair number of first world countries that allow licensing of this. And again, you see a number of offshore jurisdictions. But, at this point, many of them are really more in the European sector.
We're talking with Sue Schneider. She's the publisher of Interactive Gaming News. If you have questions about how virtual casinos work, or if you gamble at one, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Andrew's on the line. Andrew calling us from Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, I'm actually wondering, to what degree are we seeing the first, free market democratization via the Internet of any market? I mean, is gambling just the first market to come online that's going to be truly free market? The Internet's going to sort of rule moot government's attempts to control market. I mean, what's next? Are pharmaceuticals going to find themselves no longer, ruled by government jurisdictions? Is the Internet freeing one market after the other? No? Mm-hmm.
I wonder what you think about that, Sue Schneider.
Well, I think to a certain extent that is the case because you have seen, unlike the terrestrial, this is where the terrestrial world is different because they have bricks and mortar and they're geographically tied to a certain jurisdiction. It's fairly open and, quite frankly, even the licensing jurisdictions are fairly competitive with each other as it relates to trying to bring in those casino or poker operators or sportsbook operators. So that is that case. I don't say it's completely free market because of the activities that have happened in the U.S. in the last year where they've gotten very, very restrictive. They've passed prohibition law and they've begun to arrest executives from some of these places. So that runs a little bit counter to the free market concept. But I think you're right in some ways. This is the first time that's happened.
And we're going to be talking more about that World Trade Organization case against the United States, which the United States is losing a little bit later. So stay with us, Andrew.
Thank you very much.
All right. Bye-bye. We heard earlier from Will Detweiler about his concerns over which of these offshore casinos have good reputations for paying promptly and which do not. How do you get around the regulations, the fact that it is illegal in this country? How do you get your money back if you've won the money online?
Well, you know, it's an interesting comment to say that it is illegal. If you asked any attorney general in any of the 50 states, I'm sure that they would say that because it's not expressly legal, it's illegal. But there are really only about 8 states that have expressly made it illegal to operate and even very fewer. I think only 1 or 2 of those have really criminalized it for the consumer. So, and even the ones that have criminalized it haven't had many enforcement actions. There's one that I can think of out of all of this. So it's tough from that regard. But, you know, he was right in that you have to do your homework. You want to look at the various message boards. You know, the reputation of these operators is very, very critical to them. They're not going to be doing things if they're in it for the long
run. I understand that, but if I wanted to place a bet online, I don't just log on and give them my MasterCard number, do I?
Well, you can't do that in the U.S. at this point.
Right. What I meant. So how do we make this transaction?
Well, the movement of the money has changed dramatically in the last year. I mean, 5 years ago, 98% of the transactions of U.S. citizens that were trying to deposit into an account, most of that was done with Visa or MasterCard. That began to get restricted about 3 to 4 years ago. And as of a bill that was passed last year, almost all methods of transferring those payments is now supposed to be illegal. But there are still a variety of ways to do it for those companies that are still taking U.S. play. They might have a prepaid card. There might be people that are establishing offshore credit cards or offshore bank accounts. There are some of the operators that actually have their own payment transaction system where they can pull money in and out of your bank account as you see fit and authorize and things like that. Mm-hmm. So it's gotten very, very restrictive, but there are still ways for the dedicated player to do it.
But broadly speaking, we're probably laundering money somewhere.
In terms of what the operators are doing?
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's what a law enforcement officer would say for sure.
These are
businesses that in many cases are in it for the long haul, and those are legitimate businesses. They've been part of the London Stock Exchange in many cases and things like that. So
yep. Still laundering money from law enforcement's point of view. In any case,
right, exactly.
We're looking at the online gambling industry, who's doing it and how. Your calls, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. And coming up, why all of this is now a major headache for the United States at the World Trade Organization. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Thanks in part to the anonymity of the web, people can do all sorts of things online, including lots of gambling. Yes, online poker is illegal in the United States, and yes, it causes real problems for some people. But it's an industry worth billions of dollars and now has the U.S. in a showdown with the WTO. We'll talk about that in a moment. But let's continue our look inside the virtual casino. Sue Schneider is with us. She's the publisher of Interactive Gaming News, which covers online gambling. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And let's turn to Bob. Bob's with us from Glendale in Arizona.
Hi. I'm enjoying the show a lot, Neil.
Thanks.
And I find the people you're interviewing are very accurate and know what they're talking about.
Oh, well, that's nice, too.
It's good. I had an opportunity several years ago, before the popularity of the poker casino on the Internet, I played a casino actually based in Israel, I find out. And I had an incredibly good streak of luck playing some high-stake blackjack. And at the end, I just asked for a cash out of $12,000. The mandatory 48-hour period went by, 2 days to get the check. There it was in my mailbox. I took it. It was drawn. It was a certified check. I went to my B of A, and it was in my account. It was a very pleasant experience.
I bet it was, but this was, I take it, some years ago.
It's about 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. It wasn't really that long ago. These people were, I think, pioneering in that at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was... really, and I had played it before, and so I had conducted a transaction, and unfortunately, or as more the norm, you don't cash out as often as you buy in.
I suspect that may be the case for a lot of people, Bob, and congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. And Sue Schneider, the ease of the transaction that he describes, typical of the situation 5 years ago?
Yes, it was then. Mm-hmm. It's a little tougher now, again, because of all the restrictions, but... that's how it used to work.
Let's talk with Bob. Bob's with us from Oakland, California.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, Bob. Go ahead. Hello? And Bob must have a problem with his phone. We apologize for that. Let's turn instead to Doug. Doug's with us from Tallahassee in Florida.
Hi, you guys. Hi. I used to play online for about 3 years, just low stakes. I made a living at it, playing several tables a day, about $100 a day. But it seemed as though the hands were fairly loose, and I tried tracking the hands and doing research on the algorithms. And I couldn't make a question in my mind go away. And I think I realized the difference between live play and online play that is very significant is that in a live deck, the cards are static. But in an algorithm pseudo-number random number generator, they're floating around, and they usually the person who's in the money lead or chip lead will get a hand for a bad beat against somebody, and it's to expedite play because this is how they make their money, by quick turnover on every game. And I'll take my answer off the phone. Thank you.
Okay, Sue Schneider, is he correct in his suspicions?
Well, you know, again, it really kind of depends. All of the issues related to software and how they're set up is based on jurisdiction by jurisdiction and the rules that are there. So it really depends on the site and where that site was located and regulated.
Mm. All right. Let's see if we can get this is John. John's on the air with us from Grand Rapids in Michigan. John, you have to turn your radio down.
Yes.
Go ahead. You're on the air, John.
Oh, thank you.
And you have to turn the radio down, please.
Okay, thank you. My question is, why can't these operations be regulated and taxed like any of the hundreds of Indian casinos around the country?
That is a question. Sue Schneider, do you have an opinion on that?
Sure. The answer is it can be. It is in 88 countries around the world, including, as I mentioned, UK, Australia. Most of the European countries allow it for their own residents.
What's our big problem with this?
You'd have to ask your congressman, and I'd encourage you to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's really trying to save us from ourselves more than anything else, because it can be regulated and taxed. You actually have an industry that cries out for that, which is pretty rare.
Mm-hmm.
John, thanks very much for the call.
Okay, thank you.
And we'd like to thank Sue Schneider for her time today.
You're welcome.
Sue Schneider is the publisher of Interactive Gaming News, and she joined us today from the studios of our member station in St. Louis, KWMU. And as we've just heard, and I think it comes as no surprise, there are certain circumstances under which the United States allows online gambling and certain situations where it chooses not to. And this has become an issue before the World Trade Organization. The small Caribbean country of Antigua, home to several online casinos, sued the United States over the laws that prohibit Americans from gambling online, and Antigua won. Attorney Mark Mendel represents Antigua before the WTO. He joins us today by phone from his office in El Paso, Texas. And it's nice to have you on the program today.
Well, thank you very much.
So what is Antigua's case against the U.S. ban on online gambling?
Well, basically, we asserted that by prohibiting the provision of these services from Antigua, that the U.S. was violating its treaty obligations under the WTO agreements. And much to everybody's surprise, I guess, we brought the case against the United States and prevailed.
And this has prevailed twice. There's been an appeal.
Yes, we won in the beginning, and then they appealed it, and we won on the appeal. And then they, about a year later, they said that they had come into compliance with the decision, which, of course, we disputed. And so we had to bring that back to the WTO, and we prevailed at that time as well.
So at the moment, what's under consideration?
Well, at the moment, we are in the process of starting this procedure that will allow Antigua to in essence, retaliate through special tariffs or special charges against the United States, against U.S. industry, until such time as the U.S. comes into compliance with its obligation.
Retaliate how?
Well, we are asserting that because Antigua has such limited trade itself, for example, I think in the last year for which there is data, all Antiguan trade to America amounted to about $3 million. And it's very difficult to retaliate when your trade level is that low.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if bigger countries would have the opportunity to raise tariffs on American goods to generate revenue that way. But unfortunately, Antigua, almost 60% of everything that comes onto the island is imported from America. So by raising tariffs, all we would do is make things harder on our citizens.
Mm-hmm. And I understand the offshore gambling industry, catering largely to an American market, is a big business in Antigua.
Yeah, it's a huge business. It's you know, it's a multi-billion-dollar business.
So how is Antigua going to get make itself whole after the depredations of U.S. laws?
Well, our number one strategy is to get the United States to negotiate, and that has to be the most important thing that people consider. I mean, we're looking for a fair negotiated solution here, and we think that you know, we think that one is available.
But in the meantime, what Antigua is asking for is to be able to break copyright protection on things like Microsoft, for example.
Well, it wouldn't be breaking property right protection, because we would have the authority of the WTO to do it.
So you'd be legal, but effectively Microsoft would be in trouble, or other agencies, other people who distribute what, software programs, movies, videos?
Yes, all kinds of things. And effectively, we're looking to waive those kinds of intellectual property rights for goods and services that we can sell from Antigua.
And one might say that this seems a little bit out of proportion. But I guess your point is you're trying to get the United States to negotiate on this.
Sure. And you know, people have to understand that by failing to negotiate with Antigua, and I mean failing in any way to negotiate with Antigua, it's not like they've put forth a bunch of proposals and we have summarily rejected them. We have put forth proposals and have gotten nothing in response. So what... for failing to negotiate with us, they are in essence putting at risk completely innocent, you know, industry groups in America,
mm-hmm.
and just really to protect their domestic gambling business.
And when you went before the WTO and the United States made the argument, look, online gambling is illegal in the United States. We're allowed to pass laws to restrict this as other countries pass laws. For example, nobody would argue that a liquor manufacturer has the right to distribute alcohol in Saudi Arabia.
That's right, except that the U.S. is the biggest consumer and the biggest exporter of gambling services in the world. And, you know, gambling is legal in 48 of the 50 states. It's just a huge multi-billion-dollar industry in America. So it's not quite like Saudi Arabia.
And so in other words, if the federal government passed a law that says no gambling at all, would it be no gambling at all, or no, it's just no online gambling?
What they could do, that if they don't want to come into compliance with the decision by allowing us some kind of market access,
mm-hmm.
and again, I'm assuming that there's no negotiations here, what they could do is outlaw all remote gambling within, you know, within America, and that would bring them into compliance.
And would that would you have a case if it were just Indian casinos, for example? Would they be a special case?
Well, if there is, you know, the U.S. argument was that they prohibited all remote gambling in the country. They said the remote gambling is so bad and it's so harmful that it must be prohibited. So to the extent that they allow any remote gambling, it's contradictory, and therefore they cannot maintain the restriction against foreign companies.
And what online remote gambling did you cite as examples of U.S., I guess you would say, hypocrisy on this?
Yeah, well, there's the obvious one, the horse race gambling. You know, if you look at some of the horse race sites, they're identical to the sites that... that Antigua offers in many ways. There's also the ability to purchase lottery tickets on the phone, which is considered remote gambling. There's remote gambling on dog racing. There is one thing that's really overlooked by a lot of people, and that is that under U.S. law currently, it is not really illegal to do remote gambling. What is illegal is for remote gambling to cross the state line. And this is something that Nevada has already figured out. Nevada has a wholly intrastate online gambling law that allows casinos to offer those services to anybody who's physically present in Nevada. Every state in the union could do that. CaliforniaPoker.com. You know, every single state could have really almost unregulated internet gambling, as long as it occurred wholly within their borders.
And from the World Trade Organization's point of view, that doesn't make a whit's worth of difference. As long as it's allowed, Antigua should be able to get into that market too.
Exactly, because it's you know, it's not the distance, it's the remoteness. So that if remote gambling is bad from Antigua, remote gambling should be just as bad if the server is located, you know, on the other side of the city.
We're talking with Mark Mendel, a lawyer who represents Antigua before the World Trade Organization and is thus far winning his case against the United States. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation, which is coming to you from NPR News. And I have to ask you, Mark Mendel, how does a lawyer from El Paso end up representing Antigua in before the World Trade Organization?
Well, it's a long, long story, but I did develop the case on my own in response to somebody kind of posing a rhetorical question to me. And I researched the case, I developed it, and I brought it to the Antiguan government and convinced them to hire me to do it.
Mm-hmm. And are you being paid or are you on a contingency?
Oh, sure. Yes, I'm being paid.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, because it's, I'm on my fifth year now, you know, so... And I'm just I just have a small firm, so if I wasn't being paid, I'd be in big trouble. Mm.
Do you understand the difficulties the United States government is going to have in responding to this politically? I don't think Congress wants to vote to approve offshore gambling.
Well, you know, we understand the political difficulties, and we always have, and that's why we've always thought that that a negotiated solution is the best way to go. But we have also done quite a bit of kind of outreach to people on Capitol Hill as well. And from our contacts, you know, I'm not so sure that Congress is really so opposed to it. I think it's more perception than reality.
Mm-hmm.
So that, like for instance, the bill that was introduced by Barney Frank.
A Democrat of Massachusetts, the United States House of Representatives, who he's just one of several, I think, all Democrats who have introduced legislation that would, in various forms, allow online gambling.
Right.
Yeah. You understand also the position that the World Trade Organization is in. Antigua is, I'm sure, a valued and important member of the WTO. The United States is its most valued and largest member.
Well, that's true. Except, I mean, one of the reasons why we brought the case was that the WTO is almost unique among international institutions in that it is very much respected by its members, and the dispute resolution process is has worked fantastically. I think it is by far the most successful dispute resolution body in international law, and so. Because of that, they have a good track record of kind of offering a level playing field, and the smallest guy is supposed to get the same amount of respect as the biggest. And, I think that, in general, is true.
What's the next step here?
Well, we are about to go through this procedure here to get the authorization to impose these sanctions until such time as the U.S. complies, and... We think that we'll have a decision in that regard by the end of the year.
And impose those sanctions if the WTO agrees. There's nothing the U.S. government can do about this.
No, they really can't.
Huh.
And the U.S. government has bought into this system, and they didn't, for example, they didn't say, well, this is like they've done with the International Court of Justice in some respects. They didn't say, we don't respect this forum. This is something that we don't.
Yeah, they didn't say the United States is not a member of the World Court.
Yeah, and there are reasons for that, but they're a member of this, and they respect the system and have used it a lot themselves. So, they're kind of in a difficult situation here where they have bought into this system that now is, is presenting them with some difficulties on a tough case.
And I wonder, which U.S. Government agency, which department do you deal with? Is it the State Department or the Justice Department?
No, there's something called the Office of the United States Trade Representative, USTR, and they are they're the people who are given the responsibility of dealing with the WTO and a bunch of other trade issues. So that's who we've been working with for these years.
Mark Mendel, thanks very much for your time. We appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Mark Mendel, the lawyer who represents Antigua before the World Trade Organization, he joined us today by phone from his office in El Paso, Texas. When we come back, we're going to talk with Kenneth Feinberg, the man who was asked to divide the funds between victims at Virginia Tech. If you have questions for him about the job he faced or his role overseeing the Victims Compensation Fund, which he also did after 9/11, give us a call, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Or you can email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.